So good evening. So we are about 5 minutes early. This is my chit-chat session, trying to pretend to be informal. I try every means to get Singaporeans to participate. I did that in Sydney when I was teaching there. So I start a bit earlier. Try to deceive people's perception. So, everybody not here yet. So somehow the group felt a bit smaller. Then you feel more relaxed. And you are more willing to say what you have on your mind. So, some of you have attended last week's session. So any feedback, any comment, or anything? Anything come up? Everything is all gone, all forgotten. Sometimes I tell people, sometimes they say, oh, do you have printed notes? I said, I decided not to do any printed notes. But anyway, you forgot everything, right? But you kept the note. It seems that you have some knowledge, and then you have, maybe you have a folder at home that you file it up. And you have this distorted idea that you actually know something. This is all on the shelf. And if I need to, I will go back and refer to it. You never refer, right? When things are going well, why would you refer to the note? And when things are not going well, you're too miserable to even remember to refer. So that's why I always suggest to people, if you cannot remember it, then you just forget about it. No. So instead of trying to remember everything or trying to record down, see if you can just remember just one thing. One thing from each class. And if that is too much, as the class accumulates, that gets too much. Then you can remember just one thing from one course, like a 4 or 5 week course. Just remember one thing. That one thing is very important. Because if you remember it, or if somehow it made an impression on you, and you carry it forward on your own, then there you are. A long time ago, when I was a student here in Amitabha Buddha Center, one of my teacher, Geshe Lama Kwanchuk, was giving a teaching on one of these pictures, actually the golden one somewhere down there. There's many, many figures on, the complicated picture. And he was trying to explain the different individuals, the different Buddhas and so on. And he said, well, it's important for those who practice it to remember everyone in that picture. And someone said, oh, someone is very bold. Because Geshe Lama Kwanchuk, very stern. Yeah, no joking around. Would sort of complain and say, I can't possibly do that, there are too many figures. And then he said, if you remember one a day, 365 days, you would have remembered 365 Buddhas. Yeah. So, you just shut up. Of course we don't do it yet. So not to look down on just remembering just one thing or one point that is relevant to you. So as you accumulate that, you find that, it becomes your own knowledge, something that you find useful or meaningful and you can carry it forward in your own practice. So, any question? I have no problem filling up the space with, yes. What is the difference? The difference is actually, having listened or studied, the knowledge or information you gain is still belongs to someone else. Someone arranged the text, put together the words to convey certain ideas. So it very much belongs to another person's understanding and knowledge. And reflection is to take that information and apply it to yourself. You ask yourself question like, do I believe in it? Is this true for me? Is this meaningful for me? What does this mean for me? And it's actually a difficult process because it's a process of actually questioning. And most of us, I think that we didn't quite reach here because most of the time, and including myself, like when I was studying Buddhist philosophy 7 years, the entire 7 years is actually just the first step, learning and studying. Even though we do a lot of thinking, we do a lot of debating and discussing. But that actually still belongs to the first level. Just trying to make sense of the material, of the information. Not even at the level of integrating it into my own thinking, into my own understanding. And then, having done that, having reflect, contemplate, and think about it, and process the information, you come to your own conclusion, your own understanding. That and that is the one that you meditate on, that you familiarize yourself. So take a simple example. We talk about compassion. It sounds so obvious, right? Compassion. Everybody know what compassion is. But if you dig down, you find that some people have slightly different understanding of what it means to be compassionate. And some people's idea of compassion doesn't include themselves, okay? It cannot be about me. That would be selfish. That's not compassion. Well, this day, the one that is the hot topic is this idea called self-compassion. Right? Yeah. So if you don't talk to them, you thought that you're just using the same word with the same meaning. But if you dig down, you find that actually people have different understanding, different connotation. So even words, simple words like compassion, not so simple actually. Right. So you learn about compassion, you reflect on what do I understand? What is compassion to me? Now, when was I compassionate? When was I not compassionate? So that is a process of trying to understand compassion. So let's say you reach a certain understanding, then you proceed on to meditate. To familiarize yourself with this idea of compassion, to try to in the case of compassion, you try to generate it within yourself so that it becomes, so that you can bring forth a compassionate response. And then as you do that, you, somewhere along the way, you will come to see that maybe you have not fully, understand compassion. Maybe there's some holes. Sometimes you might realize you got it all wrong. So then you go back to the beginning and go back and think, what have I learned about compassion? Then you reflect again, then you meditate. So it's an iterative process. Yeah. Actually, what happened is what we call analytical meditation these days is actually reflection. Because what happened is we don't reflect outside of that context. So then we end up doing the reflection in the so-called meditation. Yeah. But traditionally, you do that reflection prior to, you kind of have to have some idea what on earth you're meditating on before you can actually meditate. Any other questions? Come on. Okay, so let's start. Let me just recap a bit what I covered last week. Anyone new to the class? First time? Okay, no problem. I always repeat myself. So people will come often say, they're just repeating himself. I tell you, even if I repeat, they still don't remember what I said. No. So I repeat the whole call. So last week, I explained this course called Experiencing the Buddha's Teaching. So we are looking at how to actualize or make real some of the teachings that we heard or we learned about from the Buddha, to experience them, to transform information into actual experiences. So that's the aim. And I hope to cover some of the conditions that are helpful in this first course, preparing the foundation. Is what are some of the variable conditions that enable us to bring about this actual experiences? Or sometimes we use the word realization to make real. And I like to explain realization as a shift in perspective. So previously you see a situation in a certain way, and therefore you think about it in a certain way. You feel, you have feelings about it in that way. And therefore you also react to it in that way. So it's all all aligned. Okay, how you see it, how you think about it, how you feel it, and how you react to it. So realization, a simple way to understand it, there's a shift, and I now look at the situation from a different angle. So I actually see it differently, or it appears to me differently, and therefore I think about it differently, I feel differently, and I respond differently. Right? One moment I see this person as a troublemaker, make life difficult for me. I'm very angry, very upset. I can't get over my anger. I say, why should there be such a person? Right? Then the next moment, I see this person differently. This person is very unhappy, lots of suffering, burdened with a lot of habits, or what we call strategies to cope with his or her life, but strategies that tend to backfire or make things even more difficult for himself and the people around. So I see this person as a very unhappy person. Because I see him in that way, I think about him differently. I have a different feeling towards him. I actually felt maybe compassion instead of anger. And so the next time I meet this person, I might respond differently. Not from a place of anger, but from a place of compassion. Right? So that is a very simple example of a shift in perspective. And you can even say that it's a mini realization. Mini realization that liberate you from anger towards this person, and find a different way to relate to this person. One that I think is more healthier, and help you to relate to this person in a better way. At least it will cause you less suffering. It may not improve or may not change the person, but at least you are less upset by the person. You don't have to carry that anger around with you. So that's kind of what we are looking at. And we start off by asking ourselves, what are the favorable conditions that can help to catalyze this kind of shift? Because quite often we are quite stuck, especially when we're very stressed. We know something needs to change. But when you're stressed, it's very hard to change. Because you are basically coping with stressful situations. You rely on your old strategies, things that you have been practicing all your life, how to cope with this kind of difficult situation. If you are someone that worry a lot, you worry, then of course when you're stressed, you worry more. Right? If you are someone that afflicted with quite often a lot of anxiety, when you're stressed, you have more anxiety, but you do more of the things that you are familiar with that so far has somehow helped you to arrive at that place. You survive. Yeah? Or if you are someone that tend to react by getting angry, by being aggressive, then you just get more angry and more aggressive. So, and that's why we are kind of a bit stuck in that. And the realization allows us to step out of that old habit and to have, to try on something new, something different. And there are certain conditions that are helpful for making that shift, according to the Buddhist teaching. So last week I introduced the first condition, which is calm abiding. So this first part of today, I'll just review a little bit. What is calm abiding? What does it mean? It's a form of meditation which allows us to name means we calm the disturbance of the mind. Disturbance can be divided into two categories. One is disturbance that are very agitated, lots of energy. That's when you just ding, 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 ding. So this is what people come to meditation class and say, I want to stop thinking. Okay, that is the agitation part. And the other part, so agitation is too much energy. Energy that is not a very peaceful energy, very disturbing. It depends on what sort of thought you're dwelling on. And the other end is too little energy. You feel very dull, you feel very unmotivated, you feel very heavy, very sad. Depression is a form of that, an extreme form of that. So these are the two disturbances of the mind. So in calm abiding meditation, we practice to free the mind from these two sets of disturbance. So you calm this disturbance so that your mind, your attention, can come back and abide and rest whatever it is you are meditating. And this is the one that most people are familiar with. So sometimes people call it concentration. I don't like the word because concentration tend to imply you need to work very hard. Let's concentrate, like constipated like that. Concentrate, then I cannot concentrate. I'm too exhausted. So I don't like the word concentration. You don't understand, think about constipated. Because it's like, you really try to squeeze something out of you, like you tense up. And that's actually a wrong understanding of karma vibe. Okay? There's no muscular tension involved. Some people watch the breath until, I don't know how they do it, they have headache. They put so much effort into trying to concentrate. That's not a peaceful experience. There's nothing calming about it. I wouldn't even use the word abahai. It's almost like you try to imprison your mind. Okay, you're going to stay with the breath or die. A lot of violence underneath it. There's nothing peaceful about it. And I think that's the wrong understanding. Right? Don't laugh, okay? A lot of people approach meditation like this. So karma abiding is as you calm all the disturbance, the mind find or your attention find very very pleasant or very enjoyable to just come back and abide, to just rest on whatever you're meditating on. Could be, let's say breath, the most common one. So you actually stay with the breath, not because you have to, but because you're quite happy. I don't really want to go anywhere. There's no TV drama that I need to catch up on, you know. So, Game of Thrones, I think last season is out. Someone told me, I never watched it yet. So I don't feel I need to go somewhere to find happiness. Happiness is already here. And this simple thing of the breath, you know, quite contented. So this is karma binding. It's almost like doing almost nothing at all. Effortless, you don't need to put any effort, it just happens by itself. And so it's very restful. Right? It's in fact a superior way of resting your mind. Right? Even more restful than sleep. Because you actually sleep, sometimes you still dream. And some dreams, a lot of dreams are full of anxiety. Right? But karma body meditation is really a resting of body and mind. You set aside all unnecessary things and you just rest. Okay? So this is kind of like a more advanced stage, but you can experience something similar to it very early on when you start practicing calm abiding meditation. And I'm saying that this is a favorable condition that help us to bring about shift in our perspective. The reason is because our mind is very cluttered. We all lots of things on our mind. I haven't filled in my tax return. Sometimes so many things that you need the mobile phone to help you keep track of. Oh, today I have to be here. Oh, okay, all right. I better prepare. So we have busy lives, and there are lots of things on our mind. So our mind becomes very cluttered. You know, there's actually very little space in the mind to be open, to be creative, to let new things come in. So often very hurried, very busy, we struggle a lot just to keep things going, just to survive. And the modern world is quite complicated. I think I'm getting old. I cannot catch up with new technology. This thing that came up at work, blockchain. I said, oh my god, that sounds very complicated. Yeah. So all these new things start coming up and we have to give energy and time and space of processing space to deal with it. So the mind becomes very cluttered. So this is not an ideal situation for change. Right? So if you practice calm abiding, you help to clear out all this. Right? So you create mental space. And mental space means new things can come in. You can be more creative. And that is one of the main conditions for shift in perception or perspective to happen. And sometimes when it happens, it's very miraculous. You cannot imagine that you will ever change. And yet change can come to you when the conditions are there or here. Okay? So this is one of the main conditions. So I emphasize this a lot because I think it's one of the things often neglected in the modern context when we study Buddhism. Years ago, someone, Alan Wallace, this Buddhist scholar and practitioner, explained a little bit on the difference between Tibetan practitioner and modern practitioner of meditation. So you have to understand that the nervous system of people from different culture and different time periods are very different. If there's not a Tibetan, like a Tibetan boy, what did he do, you know, growing up before he was sent to a monastery to study and practice? What did he do? Herd the yaks up the mountain, you know, then you just stay there and let the yak do whatever it does, if they do. You just entertain, you know, you just play around. There's nothing, it's just nature. There's no mobile phone, there's no game download or nothing. So you, basically, even if you want to stimulate your mind, there's limited stimulation. So you're very in touch, very grounded. Actually, Tibetan people are very, I mean, I don't mean those that grow up in the modern world, but those from the old Tibet are very grounded, very in touch, and the mentality is very different. Right? So these people are fundamentally very at ease with their own body. They're very comfortable, and they don't fill their mind with lots of thoughts. I mean, they're for think, but they just don't have so many stimulations growing up. So when they eventually go to a monastery, they do very intensive study, and then they do the meditation. The set fundamental condition of their nervous system persists. Right? I mean, they study very hard, but the study is very focused. It's not like, it's a bit different. You know? These days, I mean, kids, you know, you go to school, then you go to tuition, then weekend you go to those brain development things. You start very early, you know, like 2 years old or 3 years old. So that has an effect on your nervous system. And so you compare a Tibetan practitioner of that era and a modern practitioner. Let's look at the state of their nervous system. A lot of us need a lot of TLC when we start to meditate. We need to undo a little bit of a whole lifetime of simply just growing up in a very different society. You know? And so we need to approach it a little bit differently in order to create a favorable condition for change. And so karma binding is very helpful and almost become essential. Okay? So I hope that is a little bit of I hope it sounds a bit convincing. So last week I introduced karma binding and we did a little bit of the meditation. I introduced my 3-step process for people who are new to meditation or if you just want a bit of a guide. And then today I want to elaborate a little bit on that and then we'll do a meditation together. Okay? My 3-step process is first step is called acquiring a seat. Both physically an actual seat, a cushion or chair. Okay. And I try to convince people that come to my class, the chair is a more valuable commodity than that cushion. Okay. Because if you sit on a chair, you will feel very comfortable. And blissful. You sit on the cushion, you'll get more and more painful, right? And you can imagine which one you will feel calmer, right? I'm sure you'll find the chair is a much better aid to calm abiding than the cushion. The only benefit of sitting on a cushion is you look like a meditator. Doesn't mean that you experience meditation, you just look like you're a meditator. And also other people must not know too much about meditation. Because sometimes you look at the person, wow, the knee is so high up, you know. But then this person is basically balancing his or her entire weight on the bottom and the anchor, you know, just that little bit. So much pressure pressed onto it. You can feel bone crushing against the floor. Wow. Exquisite pain. Okay. Then I think, but there is this modern invention called a chair. Just move your backside onto the chair and all the pain disappears. How wonderful. Yeah. Actually, a more serious one is your lower back. Actually, modern people seem to have a lot of lower back problems, pain. Okay? And if you sit on the floor, which is fine, I'm nothing against it, but if you don't know how to do it, it puts a lot of tension on your lower back. It pulls on the lower back. It sort of forces it into this unnatural curvature, which as you prolong doing that, you don't manage to reach a point where you learn how to release that tension. And this is actually damaging for your back. Okay? Whereas if you sit on a chair, one that is of appropriate height, then that problem naturally disappears. So my main concern for people is I want you to feel supported in your posture and feel reasonably comfortable. You will never be perfectly comfortable because we always have different aches and pains here and there. And also your spine should be in a natural upright position. Okay? A lot of people try to straighten their back. And I suggest you don't do it. Because you're using the wrong muscles to straighten your back. You engage your so-called skeletal muscle, the muscle we use for movement to straighten. But skeletal muscles are for movement, not for postural maintenance. The muscles that maintain your posture is deeper, and they're involuntary muscles. As in, you don't get to tell them what to do. They respond to the condition of your body and your posture and your habit. That's the one that chiropractors went, and then, I'm adjusting your spine and you hope to affect the deeper muscles in you. Okay? So don't try to artificially straighten your back. Just try to find a position that you feel reasonably comfortable and just let yourself settle into it. Just acquiring the seat. Second step, to take some time to allow your body and mind to transition into meditation. It is out of kindness for your body and mind. It takes a while for the body and the mind to shift gears, to put aside the traffic. Just now I came by MRT. So, again, this door failure. So you stand there for this announcement. Oh, I'm so sorry, you'll be delayed 5 minutes or whatever. Just literally stand in this packed train. So that has certain effect on you, right? I mean, you do that with commute. And so when you come from that kind of situation, and you immediately sit down and meditate, there is a transition necessary to help your body and mind to put aside all those things that happen so that you can then enter into a different state. So this transition. And today we're going to spend a bit of time on the transition. One of the best ways to catalyze that transition is to return your attention to your body. Okay? So, my idea is a lot of us live a bit disconnected from our body. Because maybe our job requires us to think a lot, we dwell up in the head, or we are very focused on our eyes, we spend a lot of time looking at the screen, but we are not so in touch with the sensations of the body. Sometimes to the extent that there are people who they don't realize they are very tired, they don't feel hunger, they don't feel thirst, which is quite serious. They're so preoccupied with working that they can't tell whether they are thirsty or not, or whether they are dehydrated. It sounds funny, but I'm sure people are like this. Yeah. So this is not a good situation to be in. And you'll find that it can be easily reversed by returning your attention. Let's come back to the body. And it's almost like reconnect the body and mind. Then automatically the body starts to say, oh, alright, no rushing anywhere. I can relax a bit. Why am I like tightening all these muscles? Nobody's looking at me. So then you can soften and relax. So automatically a shift happens and the settling process begins. Okay? And the third step is, I call it deepening meditation, which is to help you deepen the releasing all this tension, release all this agitation, help you to release the tiredness so that body and mind can settle deeper into meditation. Okay? So that's the idea between the three. And so what we're going to do in this meditation is I'll guide you and I'll invite you to return your attention to the different parts of the body. Yeah. ask you, pay attention to your crown, come back, whether you can notice sensation at your crown, come back to your face, your forehead, you know, notice sensation there, come back to the throat, the neck, your shoulder, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So as I, la-di-da, 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 you know, just feel free to ignore me. And you will be very accomplished if you didn't hear a single word that I say during this meditation. Either you are asleep, which is fine, or you are tired, or you are deeply absorbed in your own meditation, in your own experience coming up. So much more interesting than what I'm talking about, right? And then anyway, I've already gone off to my knees, and you are still at your shoulder. Doesn't matter. No problem. Okay? You don't have to feel that you need to keep pace with me. All I'm saying is that might be helpful for you, that's all. Okay? So let's give it a try and see what happens. So just first step, acquire a seat, a stable, comfortable seat. So if you are sitting on the floor like me, then have your leg crossed in whichever way that provide a broad supportive base. And one that allow your spine to be upright. So it's good to sit on the cushion or at the edge of the cushion, just to lift up your pelvis a little bit, allow it to tilt a little bit so that the spine can assume its natural upright position. Those of you sitting on a chair, see if you can have both feet firmly planted on the ground. Give a sense of stability to your body. Allow your back, again, to be upright in a natural way. You can use the backrest or you can sit away from the backrest, whichever is helpful. So in either case, have your arms and hands resting either on your knees or in your lap, whichever way you may have learned or whichever way that feels comfortable for you. The main thing is you want to allow your shoulders to be as relaxed as possible. You don't really want to artificially hold up your arm or tense up the arm muscle in any particular way. Usually I suggest people to just close their eyes completely. Of course, if you are used to other ways of placing your eyes, that is also fine. So closing your eyes completely cuts off one source of distraction, visual distraction, may allow you to give your full attention to your inner experience. So take a few moments, let your body find its way into this meditation posture of yours. And see if you can really sense sensations at the different points of contact between your body and your cushion, your body and your chair, your body and the floor. At this point of contact, you will notice sensations of solidity, of firmness, of stability beneath you. Some of it you may experience as hard, others as soft. So these are qualities we associate with the earth element, with the ground. And feel that your entire body is well supported in this posture, on the earth, on the ground. It is well balanced and safe. You feel quite alright to release your body into this posture. Allow your body to begin automatically a process of loosening up, unwinding, letting go of any unnecessary tension or tightening. So that is the first step, acquiring a seat in your body in meditation. And now we're going to spend some time on the second step, helping body and mind to transition into meditation. So I invite you to return your attention to your body, starting at the crown of your head. See if you can imagine or try to place your attention at the crown. See if you can notice sensations here at your crown, at the top of your head. Maybe you notice a bit of tingling sensation, maybe a sensation of warmth or cool. coldness, a slight feeling of pressure, maybe nothing at all. Let's see if you can return your attention to your own crown. And sometimes to facilitate the process of settling down, I invite people to also make use of the breath. And as you place your attention on the crown, see if you can also notice the movement of the breath. It can be a bit complicated, but you will notice yourself breathing out, that outward movement of air comes with it with a feeling of relief. Feel that you are releasing carbon dioxide as you breathe out. So maybe you can also release other things. You can release tension and tightness. You can release thoughts or images, memories or fantasies that pop into your mind, more related to the meditation. And maybe you can release any discomfort at the place of contact between your attention and your body. Let's move on and try again. Let your attention flow down towards your face. Place it at your forehead. See if you can notice sensations at your forehead. Are you tightening up the muscles of your forehead? Are they quite relaxed? How about the rest of your face? Are there any tension in your jaw? Are you tightening the muscles around your eyes? So as you place your attention at your forehead, as you are aware of sensations of your own face, see if you can notice an out-breath. That's to breathe out. Give permission with the word release. Breathe out and release. Release any tension in the face so that the whole face may feel a bit softer, more at ease, more comfortable. So coming back to your body, come back to your forehead, to your face, be in touch with sensation at your forehead, at your face, and as you breathe out, release. Moving on, and feel free to move at your own pace, you can just ignore me. Place your attention now at your throat, so that you notice sensation at your throat, sensation at your neck. Maybe you notice some tension or tightness in the neck muscles, maybe not. So come back, be in touch with the sensation at your throat and neck. And as you feel an out-breath, see if you can practice releasing. Just allow the breath to flow out naturally. And in your mind, you can say the magic word, release. Come back to your body. Now let's place our attention on our right shoulder. Choose a spot on your right shoulder. Rest your attention here. Be in touch with sensations at your right shoulder. Does it feel relaxed, comfortable, maybe a bit tight, some feeling of discomfort? And as you breathe out, once again, remind your body and mind they can release. So breathe in, see if you can be in touch with sensations at your right shoulder. As you breathe out, deepen the sense of release. And then just move on, not to worry about any tension or tightness. move downwards to your right elbow. Breathe in, place your attention at your right elbow, and see if you can notice any subtle sensations here. And as you breathe out, remind yourself to release. Breathe in, be in touch at your right elbow, right? And as you breathe out, release. Then let's move further down to the right wrist. Breathe in, be in touch with sensation at your right wrist. A strange place to pay attention to. And as you breathe out, practice releasing. Don't worry why you are releasing. As you breathe out, allow things to flow away with the breath. At your right wrist, breathe in, be in touch, breathe out and release. Then allow your attention to come back and flow into your right hand, down to the palm, the back of the hand, into the fingers, all the way to the fingertips. Notice sensations in your right hand, especially as you breathe in, and as you breathe out, release. Release the entire weight of your right arm, from the shoulder all the way down to your hand. Just allow your right arm to rest comfortably on its support. Surrender that weight entirely to gravity and release unnecessary tension. Let's move on. Let's switch side to the left shoulder. Breathing in, be in touch with sensations on your left shoulder. And as you breathe out, release. If you can, come back to your body again and again and practice releasing. Try to use as little effort as you can. Come back to your left shoulder, breathe in and be in touch, breathe out and release. And moving on, let your attention flow downwards to your left elbow. Rest your attention here, especially as you breathe in, be in touch. As you breathe out, release. Coming back to your body, let your attention flow down to your left wrist. Again, breathing in, be in touch with sensations here. Doesn't matter if you don't feel anything at all. And as you breathe out, once again, release. Even if your mind is distracted elsewhere, thinking, imagining, that's totally normal. No need to be distracted about it. Each time I mention some part of your body, just come back. Come back to your left hand. Let your attention flow into your left hand, notice the sensation in the palm, the back of the hand, the fingers, all the way to the fingertips. And as you breathe out, release. Now let's come back to the center of our chest, at what we usually call the heart center. Place your attention at your heart, the center of the chest. As you breathe in, notice sensations here. Maybe you notice the movement of the chest. Maybe you can sense the beating of your heart. And just as usual, as you breathe out, remind yourself to release. And then let's go deeper and lower. Let your attention flow downwards to your navel region, your belly. Place your attention here as you breathe in. Notice sensations at your abdomen. And as you breathe out, remind your body and mind that they can release. And then we go even deeper, further down. See if you can place your attention at the very end of your spine, at your tailbone. Place your attention at that area, and as you breathe in, notice sensations here at your tailbone, the very base of your spine. And as you breathe out, release. Release the weight to your pelvis. Just allow it to rest comfortably on your feet, on the cushion, on the chair. Breathe out, release any unnecessary tightness and tension at your pelvis. And just let the entire weight of your pelvis, your upper body, to rest comfortably on your support. Now let's go down both legs at the same time. You start at the hip joint. Just place your attention on the left and right hips. Don't worry if you don't know where they are, just roughly. Place your attention there. Breathe in, be aware of those sensations. Breathe out, release. Let the attention flow down to both knees. Notice sensations in both knees. And as you breathe out, once again, release. Let your attention flow further down to both ankles. Notice sensations in both ankles. As you breathe in, be in touch. As you breathe out, release. And then let that attention flow into both feet. Notice sensations at the soles of the feet, at the top of the feet. Sensation in your toes. within being touched without release. If you can release the weight of both legs, just let them rest comfortably on the floor. Surrender their weight to gravity. So now we have gone through the entire body, come back and re-establish connection between our mind and body. So the last place to revisit is our face. You may notice that you have tensed up the facial muscles during this process, trying to make sense of what I'm asking you to do. So return your attention to your face. And you do notice any tension or tightness as you breathe out. If you can release them. Let back a feeling of softness, relaxation into your face. So rest the body and mind in this state of meditation. Allow the feeling, the process of release to continue on its own. Rest your attention on your natural breath. Just allow yourself to be aware of the in-breath and the out-breath. And see if you can allow yourself to enjoy any pleasant feeling, any slight feeling of relaxation, or ease, or comfort in any part of your body. See if you can become aware of them. See if you can allow yourself to enjoy them and appreciate them. Excuse me. So that is 20 minutes of meditation. A little bit busy sometimes. So that is emphasizing the second step of helping body and mind to make transition by very consciously and deliberately return your attention to come back and to be in touch with different parts of the body. So up to this point, any question, any comment? How to better engage the involuntary muscle? Actually, the way you engage your involuntary muscle is not so much that you're telling them what to do, but you return your attention and become aware of what is actually happening in your body, like for example in your back. So in another version of this kind of meditation, actually ask you to place your attention on your upper back. You just rest your attention on the upper back. Rest your attention on the middle back. Rest your attention on the lower back. I mean, much slower than this. And what happens is, as the connection is remade between mind and body, sometimes you'll find that the spine, the muscles will move by themselves. And you say, oh, actually, I've been like, all by itself, it sort of straighten up or open up. Yeah. Because they're involuntary, so you cannot actually, in any way or form direct it to do certain things. But you can help your body to readjust by giving it more information, but become more aware of what your body is doing at this moment. Then yoga is good for this kind of thing. There are different forms of yoga, but a form of yoga that emphasizes more on not just getting yourself into the pose, but become aware of what has been triggered by the pose, you know, so that you're more aware of the state of your body. And then that helps the body to readjust itself. Any other question about that? Anybody find it very busy, very disorienting? Anybody? It can have some, it affect people differently. Yeah. Some people might say that, how come it's not regular? How come you spend so long on this spot? Then very quickly at the other spot. Because if I get distracted, then you spend longer at the other spot. I'm not distracted. It's very organic. Yeah. Okay, anyway, that is one way I find personally very helpful. Seems to take a long time. It seems to be spending a lot of time on preparation. But the more you do it, the faster it will go. What I'm trying to do is try to explain and try to guide them. And as you become more habituated to it, the effect of it can be more pronounced. Now, of course, if you want to experiment, you can lie down on your back and do this. It's a modified form of what someone called yoga nidra. Nidra means sleep. So yogic sleep. I find it very helpful because it has quite a pronounced effect on the body and mind. It kind of catalyzes a deeper sense of release. And I think that is very helpful for a lot of us. A lot of us, even though you put yourself in a meditation posture, comes with a lot of tension, a lot of habituated tension and tightness. And those tension and tightness, if they are not addressed, they, in a way, they disturb the meditation. I mean, can you imagine your body is like, they're all calm, calm, calm. No. Unless, until you unwind and release that tension. It doesn't mean that you sort of fall flat, but it's just that there's no unnecessary tightening or wounding up of your system. As you release that, as your body settles down, then the mind has a chance to settle down. So the effect is more pronounced, but you become less alert. Because we tend to associate relaxation with sleep, right? Yeah. But sometimes I tell people, don't worry about it. Just go to sleep. Because it's better to learn to address the tension so that progressively you even day-to-day life, you dwell with less physical tension. And then that also filter back into your meditation. It's simply meditation is not something that you do just once. And not, also it's not like a medication. It's not like a pill or a drug that you take a shot and then, I'm calm and peaceful, no thoughts. Yeah. But it's actually a building up of positive habits or undoing of all unhelpful habits. So, when you first learn, it's very hard to bring everything together immediately. The body relaxes. Very alert, but body very tight. So that doesn't matter. Sometimes you err on one side, I suggest you err on the relaxation side. So when you eventually you caught up on your sleep, you're more relaxed physically, then you can then swing backwards. Then you can work on the alertness side. Don't try to get everything perfect the first time round. If you become more relaxed, more at ease, more comfortable in your physical posture, then later it's quite easy to brighten up the mind, to become more alert, more aware, more present. Okay, so that is karma binding. I have taken a lot of time. Alright, today's topic is another favorable condition. So apart from karma binding, another favorable condition is in Buddhist terminology, it's called accumulating merit. Accumulating something really positive and really supportive. For someone with a black thumb, not a green thumb, but black thumb, that you give me a potted plant, very lush, really green, and growing very well. After 2 weeks, it can look like it's about to die. So I'm no position to talk about gardening, but gardening is a good analogy for this favorable condition. Okay, this accumulating merit, I like to think of it this way: when you don't have enough merit, I mean you don't have enough positive potential, or positive energy, which is a very vague word. It's like a land or soil that is too sandy. So it doesn't retain anything. You pour water, all the nutrients and water off. That's it. The sand. That's all there is. Or soil that is so dry until it crack on the surface. There's not a single drop of moisture. You plant a seed inside there, the seed just stay there because there's no water or there's nothing. No water or no nutrients. So nothing there to support growth. A heart that is devoid of merit or lacking of merit is like that. No lack of nutrients that will support growth. So whereas a soil that is a good soil, talking about soil in Singapore is a bit strange. Soil that people take a lot of effort to develop, to take care of, put compost in, to make sure to have a lot of organic materials, a lot of organisms, like worms and things like that. They enrich it, they aerate it, so it's very moist and very rich. So anything you plant in it, there is a lot of nutrients for the seeds to absorb and to grow well. So you compare if the heart and mind is devoid of nutrients. It's just like this dry, sandy, clay soil. There has nothing there to support growth. Nothing grows in it. You plant something that's growing well, transplant it into this, it will just wilt and die. It doesn't not manage to get anything from the soil. There's nothing inside to support that growth. Okay? So this is a heart that is hardened, become very rigid, very inflexible, very unaccommodating. It's not been enriched or softened by kindness and compassion. It doesn't have it's not very giving, not very forgiving. So it's just this lump of really hard thing. What good can come out of it? What goodness can grow from it? So the second favorable condition of accumulating merit is to work the soil of your heart, to improve its quality, improve its aeration, improve its organic content, so that it becomes something really enriched. And whatever you plant in it, whatever you grow in it, it has a lot of nutrients to feed it and to encourage it to grow. So that's my idea of merit, which is very different from, traditionally, they tend to like to, tend to be a very calculating, right? We don't like to tell people that, but we like to calculate. Good deed and that good deed, which one give me more merit? Oh, let me keep everything to the merit multiplying day. In the Tibetan tradition, there's a few days where it's supposed to be a very good bargain, You do one little thing, then you multiply a few million times. So you don't do good deeds for the rest of the year. Forget about it. So this, we're Singaporean, very efficient. We can think, we can calculate. I save all my good deeds on that very day. No. Then, well, multiply a few million times, right? Why every day we work so hard for one? No. Just do it one shot. That's it. I calculate. I can calculate. Good ROI, isn't it? No. Unfortunately, I think that kind of analogy has been misused. The whole idea is you do good all year round, and you do especially more good deeds on those special days. Just to encourage you to do more. Unfortunately, you know, we don't necessarily think like this. So, I like to switch the analogy. So forget about the money business. Don't calculate this and calculate that. Think about how to enrich basically the inner environment of your own heart. So that it actually, is a fertile environment for goodness to flourish. And the Buddha gave what sometimes called the three grounds for meritorious activity. Another list, alright, it's very Buddhist. Three types of activities you can engage in that help you accumulate merit, help you to, you know, improve the organic content of your soil. Giving, that's a classic one. Practice of generosity or giving. Practice of ethics. Really make a conscientious effort to live according to ethical principles in your daily life. And the last one is meditation. Okay. And in particular, the Buddha praised meditation on loving kindness. He likes to compare, you know, you don't know people calculate, right? There's a single moment of genuine loving kindness that comes out of your meditation. Just one moment. One single moment. No need so long, okay? Maybe it won't last so long, right? Just that split second of genuine loving kindness. You know, like 16 times the merit of, I don't know how he worked out these figures, of offering tons and tons of precious stones to the Buddha and the universe or something like that. So, it was comparable. A moment of genuine loving kindness, the merit far exceeds any physical act of giving. Of course, this is, it's just a way of a teaching technique. Because giving can also be done out of genuine loving kindness. In fact, you look at these three activities, giving, ethics, meditation, in particular, meditation and loving kindness. They're all related. You can see they're all related to kindness. So I meditate on kindness. Out of kindness, I live my life in an ethical way. Ethics, at the heart of it, is to do no harm. I don't harm myself. I also don't harm others. I avoid activities or actions that cause harm. That's a simple way of understanding ethics. And giving is also out of kindness. You know? Out of a sense of abundance, I share, I give. So I can give to those in need, practice charity. I can give, as in like making offering, which is an expression of respect and admiration to the Buddha and the teachers and other holy figures. Yeah. So again, out of a positive attitude. Okay. So they are all related. So if you do an act, a simple act of giving, let's say filling water bowls. Tibetan tradition has a practice of filling and offering. How many? Seven. Okay. People are very particular about how many bowls. Okay. Alright, let's say I learn at this center and they put seven bowls. That's the holy truth. Seven bowls, right? Then I move to another Buddhist center and I put seven. And someone will say, how come only seven? What about the eighth bowl? So in that tradition, it's eight bowls. Right? So you must be very sensitive to this kind of thing. But anyway, it doesn't matter. At the end of it, it's a bowl of water. Okay, so, I give you this teaching story. This is my teaching story. My own personal. When I was living in a Buddhist center in Sydney, I used to be very hardworking. Later, I become very lazy. So at first, I have this duty of, because I live in the center, so of filling up bowls. So I try to tell people, it's good to be generous, but don't be too generous. Don't put bowls all over the place. No, bowls here, bowls there, bowls there. I have to fill it up, and I have to clear it up, right? So please limit yourself to three sets of bowls. On the altar, okay? So 21 bowls, right? So I have my duty for for quite a number of years is to fill them in the morning and to clear them in the evening. Yeah. And later I evolved another lazy way to do it, but that's a different story. Then I used to, there is a particular kind of ritual you do. You're supposed to do it mindfully, a sense of respect or positive motivation and making offering to the Buddha. And instead, then Singaporean, that's my complaint session. So I'm very good at this. All automatic. So 21 bowls, I do that for 20 bowls. Then I come to the last one. Then suddenly I become very mindful. This is an offering to the Buddha. No. Okay. Last bowl. I'm mindful on my own. Right? Right height? So actually, I feel 21 bowls. I only make one bowl of offering. The other 20, I just feel just like say massage. I don't know. More water in the bowl. Absolutely. I mean, people with more faith would say, oh, at least there's some benefit. Mr. Buddha, I don't think so. I don't pour bowls anymore. Pour water in the bowls and just complain about my life. Oh, I'm going to do this. Yeah. So I only make one offering, just feel one off. Now, so you can tell, if you do that, one bowl, just that one last bowl, I can feel a difference in my own heart. Because it's done mindfully, conscientiously, and it's connected with a sense of, like, why I'm doing this. And this is a gesture of respect. I'm not just pouring water into bowls. I'm actually practicing giving. Okay? So just that one bowl, quite powerful. If I really can do it, 21 bowls like this, can you imagine that effect it has on your mind and heart? And if you to do it, not because you're obliged to do it, but because you want to do it, something that you enjoy doing it, you feel that it's something very positive to do, you do it every day. Now what sort of effect it has on your mind? It really kind of becomes, this is not an empty ritual. This is a routine, not a chore. This becomes something like a practice all by itself. Doesn't take that long once you get used to it. You can do it reasonably fast or still stay mindful. And yet it can be it's one of those practice or activity that can change your state of mind. You can start off feeling some, another day or Monday, but then you do it and at the end of it, you can emerge on the other end of that activity. In a slightly different state of mind. Okay, so that's the practice of giving in the case of making offering. The problem with you try to do it every day is that the human mind tends to make things into routine. So my secret of, I tell you my secret of using less effort to do water bowl offering is I don't clear my bowls in the evening. I clear it this morning. Just before I need to feel it, I clear. Okay, then, clearing it and feeling all within one activity. So when that happened, eventually I decided it's time to pass it on to somebody else. It becomes a bit like meaningless. People see the bowls feel, but that is not the point. The point is, what sort of state of mind do you bring to that activity? And this is very common with routine, like things that we do daily, like our daily practice, our daily commitment. After a while, it loses the freshness, and we're no longer as mindful or as careful with it. And so then it becomes a routine, then it becomes a chore. Then you say, oh, today I'm not supposed to work very early. So I'm sorry, Buddha. Another day. So then it becomes the exercise of making up excuses. Yeah. Then by then I think it's a meaningless activity, regardless of what people say. Because the mind and heart is no longer in it. Then doing it is an empty ritual. Right? Okay. It's all giving. So I want to emphasize this whole idea of accumulating merit is really this idea of enriching the heart. It's something really positive. And you support that through different activities of giving. And Another practice is ethics. And most Buddhists would take up what we call lay precepts, the 5-day precepts. In the Tibetan tradition, you can choose to take all 5, or you can take choose 4 of them, or 3 of them, or 2 of them, or 1 of them. And so that is quite flexible, which is quite good. You take on whatever precepts you feel ready to do, and you try in your daily life to keep to the boundary of the precept. The precept helps you to be more mindful of what you're doing day to day. And sometimes on special occasion, you can, I think here also organized, you can take for 24 hours from sunrise to next day sunrise, what we call the 8th precept. Then again, there's this phenomenon when you take the 8th precept. You have the occasion to explain to people the 8th precept. You immediately realize where people's attention is rest on the 8th precept. The 8th precept is no killing, no stealing, for 24 hours, no sexual activity at all. Nothing. Because it's just 24 hours. No lying, no taking of intoxicants. It's a sort of like the 5 standard one. And then the other 3 is, this one, if I don't get it wrong, no sleeping on high beds or sitting on high thrones, no wearing of perfumes or ornaments and all these things. And lastly, no taking of solid food after noon, after lunch. I tell you, which one do you think generates the most questions? No. Which is where our heart actually resides. No, our heart is not residing and not causing harm by killing or stealing or misuse sexual energy. No, no, no. You got it all wrong. Actually, among the 3, the not wearing perfumes or ornament is not so bad. No, not so many. But, oh, the other 2. Cannot sleep on high bed. I paid $2,000 for my mattress. It was a really special one. I have really bad back, you know. What am I going to do? That's the beginning of one set. That's one type of question. And the other one, of course, most famous one. Not eating solid food after lunch. Can take meal or not. No, like afternoon, a bit of milk and the tea, you know, coffee. You can or not. Oh, this is very funny. Yeah. Noon, exactly noon, is it? What about, not finish? Can I start before noon and finish at 1 o'clock? Yeah. So, all sorts of questions. And so, I perfectly understand, no? Because I myself also like this. Yeah. but the question sometimes also shows that we understand or we perceive precepts in a particular set of mind. It seems like a deprivation. Wow, it's a loss of marriage. But very calm one, you know. Cannot eat after lunch, you know, very hungry. Then, some tradition, not the Tibetan tradition, the Chinese tradition can be very strict. You actually have to sleep on the floor. You know, maybe put a mat or a thin mattress, but you literally cannot sleep on the bed. Because it says not sleeping on a high bed. And I think in ancient India, it's not, you know, people don't have high bed with thick mattress, right? So anyway, every day they sit either on the floor or on a plank of wood, so it doesn't make any difference, right? But us is different. Yeah. But you, by listening to the question, you can understand where our concern are. And but the emphasis of precept is not so much to deprive us. It's actually a training of attention and kindness. So we voluntarily take on certain hardship. We endure certain inconvenience. It's going to be inconvenient, yeah, because it helps us to become more aware and more mindful. We also, I think here they do this fasting retreat called Nyune. Yeah, 24 is a 2.5 day kind of thing. But the day in the middle for 24 hours, sometimes more than 24 hours. This is quite a serious fasting. No eating at all for that whole day. No drinking at all. That is the tough one. And no talking. Which is very important. Because if you can talk, then, wow, I cannot move. I'm going to die. How can I survive? Shut up. No talking. So you conserve a lot of energy to face your own suffering. Now, Nyune is associated with Kuan Yin, the Buddha of Compassion. So it's a practice you voluntarily go through it. So, you endure the hardship, the suffering. It's very hard to avoid the suffering. Yeah. But hopefully you approach it with the attitude that then you understand compassion. It's very hard to have genuine compassion if you don't suffer. Because compassion is the heartfelt response to suffering. So when you experience starvation and dehydration, you say, wow, 24 hours, it's almost unbearable. Cannot sleep, actually. I usually cannot sleep during New Year the night. Just so dehydrated that I just can't sleep, I just stare. So I like when the last day, I like it when they start at 3 a.m. Then you can start at 2 a.m. also, the last session. Because I can't sleep. So we'll just get it over with. And then we can break fast after that. Yeah. And so, ethics is not so much trying to, I mean, not like a legal law. Am I breaking it? Am I not breaking it? But can I, through practicing the precept, become more aware of my own actions, become more aware of the effect of the actions on myself and others, and I can do it out of mindfulness, out of kindness and compassion. Okay, so that is the main thing about it. And when you can do it, then you find that ethics become something very enriching in your heart. Okay? In fact, the Buddha says if you keep good ethics, you experience the happiness of blamelessness. No blame. Because you know you live your life in the best possible way, in an ethical way, trying to avoid causing harm to yourself and others. At least you try not to intentionally cause harm to yourself and others. So and when you reflect back, you feel very happy that it is without blame. Blamelessness is one of the happiness that come out of ethics. Okay? The last one is meditation on loving kindness, which we're going to do a simple short meditation on it. And so this is one of my favorite meditations. We all have loving kindness. We all have love. We all are kind. So loving kindness meditation is not about newly creating love and kindness. It's helping us to get in touch with those qualities and help us to encourage them to manifest more often towards ourselves and towards others. Sometimes they kind of gone on a whole holiday or vacation. Nowhere to go because it's so stressed, right? Cannot think about kindness. You're not kind to everybody around you, not kind to yourself also, because you're just stressed, unhappy, a lot of pressure on you. So, loving kindness meditation is really about just take some time to get in touch with that quality and encourage it to come forth. And I'm very bad at this loving kindness meditation. I used to be very bad. So people always say, oh, feel love within your heart and radiate out to everybody. Now I come. Feel. No love left. What is this love? What does it feel like? Who have love has it gone? Yeah. Oh, must be hopeless case. Cannot do loving kindness meditation. Actually it's not true. So I found a way which worked for me and I introduced it to you. Just a very simple way. I use words. I use my standard phrases. So I repeat these phrases and I don't worry about the feeling. Sometimes you feel loving, sometimes you feel bored, sometimes you feel angry. It depends on who you direct it to. But that doesn't matter. The feeling comes and goes. And see if you can stay with not just the words, but the intention behind the words. So I say, this is my four lines. You can change them if you want. May I live in safety. May I live in safety. My friend once said, wow, why safety? Do you feel not safe? Do you feel in danger? I said, not really, but there are times in my life I feel insecure. Like, for example, if you're in between jobs or you have a lot of debt, financially insecure, you find it very hard to be happy. It's very hard to relax, actually, if you have a lot of financial worries and burdens. Other times, as the doctor says, oh, I think this test, we need to do it again. Then that's it. What is this? What do you mean by doing it again? What have you found? No? You need to know what to tell you because they're not so sure. They don't want to pass. Then the next few weeks will be in agony, isn't it? What's going to happen to me? Do I have cancer? You don't feel safe. It's very hard to be happy. But may I live in safety? May I be happy? May I have this kind of mental cheerfulness, joy, mental happiness? May I be healthy? So may my physical health don't give me any trouble. I feel very at ease physically. May I be healthy? And may I live with ease? May everything in life flow smoothly? People who drive, I always say, no. Wherever you drive to, immediately you will get your ideal parking lot. How wonderful it is. You come to Geylang, I think the parking is just as bad, right? And then you drive around and around and around looking for a lot. Is this right? There you are. Life just flows smoothly and easily. Surely you will wish that for yourself, isn't it? May I live with ease. Okay? May I live in safety, may I be happy, may I be healthy, may I live with ease. Okay? So we have 10 minutes. You save 5 minutes for yourself and then 5 minutes for someone else. We're going to do this meditation and I'll guide you to do it. So you offer loving kindness using these phrases of kindness and direct it towards yourself and towards others. So just sit comfortably in whichever posture of meditation you prefer. Close your eyes if that's helpful. And let's start with a few deep breaths. Just breathe in and out deeply. And as you breathe out, remind your body and mind that they can release. Release any discomfort in your body. Just set aside thoughts or ideas or images not related to the practice. Just let them go with the breath. Just allow the breath to flow naturally for the rest of the meditation. And now we're going to spend a few minutes cultivating, meditating on loving kindness, which is the heartfelt wish for ourselves and others to be happy, to find happiness, and to find the causes of happiness. And we do so by picking or choosing a few simple sentences or phrases that best convey our understanding of what it means to love. So I introduce you to my stock phrases. May I live in safety? May I be happy? May I be healthy? May I live with ease? So feel free to change the words, add or subtract. Just find a few sentences or phrases that best convey for you what it means to love, to care, to show concern, to have kindness. So we're going to start with ourselves. So very simply, repeat the phrases in your mind, and as you say it, see if you can offer it to yourself, wishing all these positive things for yourself out of intention. Loving kindness. So, mindfully, slowly, at your own pace, may I live in safety. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. So, come back to the phrases, which is the support for your meditation on loving kindness, again and again. Slowly, mindfully, repeat them and see if you can. Stay close to the intention behind the word, the intention of kindness, of love, care, concern, and wish them for yourself. May I live in safety. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. So see if you can, if you do get distracted, be kind to yourself. Simply return your attention to the words, to the phrases, and repeat them. Offer loving kindness to yourself. And as you do so, some of us may notice some feelings might respond to what we are doing. Could be the warm feeling that we associate with love, with care, and concern. If that happens, entwine the feeling of warmth around the world and offer it to yourself. Otherwise, more likely you don't feel anything at all. And that is also perfectly normal. See if you can just stay with the intention behind the word, with as much sincerity you can find within your heart. Just say the phrases, just offer loving kindness to yourself. May I live in safety. May I be happy. May I be healthy. May I live with ease. So just as we wish ourselves to be happy and healthy, we can also direct loving kindness to others, to other people in our life. So see if you can shift the focus to someone close to you. Just pick one person among the many. Bring that person to mind. You can even picture the person. And then see if you can repeat the same or similar phrases and just offer the wishes of loving kindness towards this person. May you live in safety. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. May you live in safety. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. So slowly, at your own pace, if you can, as you say the word, be as sincere as you can possibly be. Hold on to that intention of love, care, and concern, and offer the phrases to this other person. May you live in safety. May you be happy. May you be healthy. May you live with ease. And then finally, we extend the thought of loving kindness to everyone, every all sentient beings. So we can say that by whatever positive merit, anything positive we created today, coming here, learning about the Buddha's teaching, meditating. So we dedicate that merit with the thought of loving kindness that may all sentient beings everywhere live in safety. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be healthy. And may all sentient beings live with ease. Okay, so today I introduce another variable condition that can facilitate us to actually experience the Buddhist teaching to gain realization, and that is accumulating merits, usually through the three active meritorious types of meritorious activities, giving, cultivating ethics, and through meditation, and in particular, in this case, meditation on loving kindness. So next week I'll elaborate a bit more on conditions and another meditation, something called the lazy person way to accumulate merits. You don't have to do the hard work. I'll let other people do the hard work. You can reap the benefits of it. But I just want to conclude to this idea of merits, accumulating merits, this idea of enriching the heart, make the heart become a very fertile environment for positive qualities to grow, to flourish, and also for new ideas and new perspectives to develop within yourself. So much so that eventually, sometimes you can have a change of point of view, change of perspective, and sometimes people experience it as a change of heart. But actually they are related, because you see the situation differently, so you feel differently. Or sometimes you notice the change in your feelings towards a person, towards a situation. You notice the feeling part more than the change in the perspective and change in the thinking. Okay? And this type of changes can be facilitated by cultivating and accumulating merits. Okay. So thank you very much for your attention. Have a good week ahead. Try to do some, accumulate some merits. So I'll see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.